Hey, Bill, you running any marathons or doing anything we need to know about this week?
No, I haven't run any lately. Yeah, that was a little earlier in my career. But
I tell you, it's a marathon
Teddy,
season.
Good luck. Yeah, yeah, good luck. That half marathon's not too bad. The full one, watch out.
Did you get some sleep? Are you all revved up and ready to go?
Yeah, we're kind of pushing through it today. You know, we got in real early this morning, but watched the film, had the players in, and try to get a few things done here on the Jets and then get a good night's sleep and start tomorrow.
When you go into that game, I mean, obviously, you play any opponent, you want to take somebody away. Was the game plan against the Raiders, don't let McFadden go crazy against us, considering what he did against the Jets the previous week?
Well, sure, yeah. You never want to see a running back go in and run for 200 yards against you. That's, I don't care who you're playing. So McFadden's definitely was a focal point for us defensively to not let him outside, do a good job of tackling him and try to hopefully create some negative plays and get him into some long yardage and keep him out of second and threes and second and twos, those kind of things.
Mm-hmm. How did you feel you guys did against him yesterday?
We had one bad play. I mean, that the
40-yarder.
Yeah, 40-yarder coming off a 10-yard line. That wasn't played too well. The other ones were, it was competitive. And I thought we did a reasonably good job other than that. And then, of course, we had the bad play on the reverse, which we had defended pretty well. We just couldn't make the play, and so that ended up being a 30-yard run, which fortunately we got out of on Chung's interception. But those are the two runs that really hurt us in the game. Other than that, I thought we played competitively in the running game.
It looked like at the start of the game, things could have fallen apart with the kickoff out of bounds. The offense, the Raider offense, gets three on you. You got a holding early holding call against Conley on Seymour. Seymour goes ahead and he lets the emotions get the better of him, slams Tom after the whistle's blown. Was it talked about this week about keeping your poise, being in the black hole and a lot of emotion that you thought the Raiders would come with, because it looked like the team did that?
Yeah, well, absolutely. The Raiders are a heavily penalized team, and we knew it was going to be some pushing and shoving, and they actually talked about that before the game, about how we're the bullies and we want to bully people around and things like that. So, keeping our poise and trying to stay focused on our job, not get caught up in the the pushing and shoving after the play and things like that, was definitely something that we talked about. Absolutely. And we could easily retaliated on the Seymour play and gone over and hit him or whatever, and then negated but the personal foul helped us out. That got us out of a second, I think it was second and 20, second and 15, whatever it was there. And we were able to keep that drive going and ultimately take the lead with that first scoring drive. So that was big for us.
How do you balance it out, though, in that you had to match their physical play out there, which I thought you did. You had to be happy at that end. How do you balance that out?
Well, you just don't get personal fouls. Don't get unnecessary roughness penalties. Don't rough the passer. Don't get those kind of penalties that cost your team. You can go out there and be aggressive and be tough and do all those things. But when you do it at the expense of the other, the other 45 guys that are on the field playing and get 15-yard penalties for it, that's not really very productive for your team.
And I thought, that physical aspect that you're talking about, matching the Raiders, hitting them in the mouth, doing those type of things, I thought Spikes showed some plays where he was hitting the people coming downhill in the running game, had a nice tackle, picked up the running back, slammed him on his back. Is Spikes starting to assert himself a little more, especially in almost being that, I don't want to say he's the tone setter on defense, but he's starting to make those plays that show up to where, man, he just hit that guy pretty good.
Yeah, well, he is an impact player, and he's a very disruptive player inside, particularly in the running game. He's got good power and explosion, and can be a strong tackler. He plays with a low pad lever. He's got good explosiveness, and he can step up into the line and be strong, both as a tackler and taking on blockers and plugging those holes. So I think that's definitely a strength of his.
Yeah, and one thing, the strength of his taking on blockers, there was one play I watched, he slipped a guy. He actually went back door yesterday. It's a game sometimes when you're taking on those blockers at the inside linebacker position, and you don't want to be one-dimensional. It's almost like he's showing growth and starting to learn that there's more than one way to take on this 300-pounder. I can use my quickness and slip a guy.
Right, and those tall inside linebackers like Brian Cox, like Pepper, like Spikes, that have that height, that are able to a little more easily, slip blockers, arm over them, and and you know, jump out of the way can be a good changeup, as you know. And you got some mileage out of it yourself at times. So it's a good way to keep those guys honest that really roar off the line of scrimmage, trying to knock those linebackers back. And if you sidestep them, they just a lot of times aren't quick enough to recover. So yeah, Spike's he's instinctive. He has a good sense of when to do that, when not to, and he is an explosive player and a strong tackler.
You know, Bill, at one point yesterday, I thought of Teddy. You know, last week he was talking about Richard Seymour, anticipating Seymour's aggressiveness. And at times during practice, how, Teddy, you said you see Logan and Seymour go at it. Yesterday, Seymour kept saying, it's been 3 years, I'm over it. And apparently he wasn't over it. At one point he slams Brady down and gets a couple of personal fouls on one drive. Did you ever feel the need to say to a guy when he's taking on his former team, don't be too emotional, just focus on your job? Or is that something you just expected a player to know on his own? Hey, you're a Patriot now, and wherever you were before, it doesn't really matter.
I think that really comes up pretty frequently. I mean, almost every week it seems like we either have a player on our team that was with the other team, or the other team has a player that was on our team. I mean, it's pretty common. So we talk about it from time to time, and it's of course you always want to do well against your former team, or that player wants to do well against you if you were his former team, whatever it is. But I mean, that's just kind of natural. But I do think you got to take your emotions out of that and do your job, be focused on your job. And Richard definitely is trying to jump the snap count a couple times early in the game. It was offside on the one play that we ended up having a long gain on outside and ended up declining it. But, he looked like he was trying to, get off and make a couple plays that way, anticipating the snap count. So, I thought overall our offensive line did a real good job, not just him, but with, Tommy Kelly and, Henderson and Wimbley and Jarvis Moss and, all those guys. I mean, it's a pretty good front there. And I thought we held up against them pretty well, especially in pass protection. Kept the pocket clean. Brady was able to step up on a lot of throws and deliver the ball cleanly, and so that's always important.
Bill, you've always said that Tom throws to the open guy. In the first 2 weeks, they were throwing to a lot of different guys. Last 2 weeks, it's been exclusively to Wes Welker. Is he just that open that often? Have they shut everything else down, and Welker's that open?
Well, he was open. He was open on several plays yesterday. But I mean, I think Tom also did a good job of on a 2-minute drive. He had two balls to Gronkowski that were really close down the middle. Those are good decisions, and we just almost connected on those. Did a good job of hitting Ben Jarvis over the middle when he was isolated on McClain. He had several throws to Chad Johnson, which were good matchups there. And Chad was open, a number of times in the game, and Tom hit him on several of them. So, I still think Tom's is still looking for the open guy. I mean, Wes is open a lot too. So, there wasn't a lot of double coverage in that game, surprisingly. I thought that we might get doubled a little bit more, but they really didn't double Wes much. And a lot of times, as you saw, that they were playing outside or inside leverage on him, trying to keep him from coming across the middle. And, he was on a couple of those outside breaking routes, and Porter just wasn't close enough to really either cover him or a couple cases even tackle him after he made the catch. So I have no argument with Tom throwing it to him in those situations.
Sometimes the numbers tell the complete story. Sometimes they're way off. If you look at the numbers, they say this is one of the worst defenses in the league based on the yardage you've given up in the first four games. Is that accurate, or are the numbers missing a key component of something you're seeing in this defense?
Well, the reason why we're playing is the final score. So, we're 3-1. That's what we are as a team. That's what we are offensively, defensively, and in the kicking game. So, there's plenty of room for improvement in all three areas, and we'll work hard to get that. I mean, certainly we've given up more big plays on defense than we want to give up. Flip side of that is our red area defense is, better than it's been in several years. Certainly way better than it was last year. And so some things have a way of balancing themselves out.
It's like I have this question for you every week when it's some type of empty bunch set, down on the red area, and the last score of the Oakland Raiders, I think it was Moore, that was once again open in the end zone. Looked like Chung might have got caught up in a traffic situation there. Was that the problem there with that wide open touchdown with Tamor? where once again, when we talked about communication last week, or was that just a traffic problem?
No, we had a miscommunication, and we cut a guy loose. You know, the play before, they ran a similar play, and, you know, Guyton pushed Boss back in the end zone. And then they ran a similar play, but off of an empty look and motioned him across the formation. We were late getting lined up. We didn't recognize it quickly and missed the communication. So, yeah, that's a concern. You're right. That's 2 weeks in a row where we've given up really an uncontested touchdown down there, and that's, you know, that's what you don't want to do. You know, make them earn it, make them make a good throw and a good catch and get their feet down in bounds. And, you know, McCourty broke up the 2-point play on the fade pattern. Guyton pushed Boss out. You know, Campbell misread the receiver on the in cut. The Chung intercepted, thought he was coming in. The receiver went back out. So, you know, you want to make him make hard plays and maybe you can make some. But, yeah, you cut a guy standing loose there in the end zone that, you know, passes that I can complete, then that's, you know, it's bad defense.
Looks like and one of your main communicators is going to be up in doubt with Gerard Mayo, his status still being uncertain. But how did the other linebackers, Guyton, the new rotation now without Mayo, how did they perform once he went out?
Well, you know, I think you lose a guy like Gerard Mayo, you certainly lose something from your defense, both in terms of, you know, playing and also leadership and communication. But, you know, Gary's a pretty experienced player. He's been in there a lot. I mean, you know, he's played with Gerard, and they're kind of interchangeable. And, you know, Spikes is, you know, in his second year, he's way ahead of where he was. And Rob's really been doing a good job for us. And, you know, Dane, Tracy, you know, also have played, you know, particularly this year in preseason. Tracy's gotten a lot of playing time through the year, and so has Dane prior to his, you know, thumb injury there in the second preseason game, and he basically missed the rest of preseason. But, you know, I think those guys all work pretty well together. And, you know, Gerard's practice has been a little bit limited the last couple of weeks in practice, so those guys have actually got a lot more snaps in practice. So, you know, if he's not able to play, then we'll just have to, you know, work through it.
And just an offensive question, something that, you know, I'm not used to seeing from a Patriot offense, the back shoulder fade to Welker down on the go. He made a great catch, got both feet in, something that teams like, you know, the Giants work on extensively, the Packers, New Orleans. That's new. I mean, I haven't seen that before used on a regular basis by you guys. Is that something you've been working on?
Well, you know, against the Raiders, it was something that that we did spend a little bit more time on just because of the speed of their corners. Those guys are so fast. I mean,
Straight
line speed guys with Rout and, you know, Johnson, who of course didn't play, but Chekwa, who replaced him, Van Dyke, you know, that they just, once they get running, they're really hard to run by. You know, like when we threw Slater the go pattern, who, you know, we all know Slater can run pretty well. But, you know, Chekwa was right there with him.
He was right
on top of him. That, you know, when those guys get running that fast, and they are very fast, it's harder for them sometimes to react to that back shoulder. And, you know, Tom made a great throw. West really made a terrific play on it, getting his body around and also, you know, locking those feet down, and he was in bounds. I mean, I know there was kind of a split call there, and then the one official came in and you know, overruled it, but, it, you know, he had them both in. It was an excellent catch on West's part, and Tom put the ball, you know, the only place it could be. So it was, you know, I think that's something, you know, when you're like the Raiders, they have those kind of corners, those kind of players. It's something you got to be, you know, offensively. If you can't run by them, then, you know, you bet your only chance is the back shoulder.
You know, it's so funny when we talk about player improvement. We usually don't focus on the stars. And, you know, Tom Brady passed Joe Montana yesterday, one of his childhood heroes. And we don't really talk about Tom Brady in terms of improvement. When you drafted Tom Brady in 2000, I'm sure he didn't say, oh, yeah, one day this guy is going to win 3 Super Bowls and pass Joe Montana on the all-time list. As crazy as it sounds, how has Tom Brady improved, not necessarily over his career, but even in the last, you know, 3 or 4 years, in your opinion?
Well, Tom works really hard, and he really concentrates on a lot of little things. You know, every week there are, you know, maybe a dozen little things that are really specific to that game that he'll work really hard on, and the next game it may be a dozen other things, or maybe some of those and some other things, depending on, you know, who we're playing and what the game plan is and you know, where we're trying to attack. So he's very conscious of, you know, again, as a quarterback, it's, It's like being a golfer, you know. You don't stand out on the driving range and just wail away. You got to hit a lot of different shots, and that's what a quarterback does. He makes a lot of different throws based on different routes, different coverages, different receivers, and so forth. And so when you perfect one thing, and if you spend a lot of time on it, then you're not spending time working on something else. And then that something else is going to come up, whether it's red area, third down, play action, you know, whatever it happens to be, thrown on the run, all those kind of things. So as a quarterback, you're always sharpening your skills. You're always trying to refine your techniques and your timing on plays with the receivers, or just even your own timing. And he works really hard at that. So, you know, I think that's part of improving as a player is knowing what things to work on, what things are, you know, that you can kind of foresee happening or being important in the game, and he does a good job of that. I mean, I really thought yesterday he played probably, you know, his best game of the year, and I'm not basing that on numbers. I'm basing it on, you know, the reads he made, the decisions that he made, his location on the ball. Not only that, managing the team, you know, and making some checks at the line of scrimmage, getting us in the right play, getting us out of a couple of bad plays that could have been a problem. So, you know, that's really what it's about for a quarterback is moving the ball, scoring points, and, you know, putting your team in a good position, getting the ball to your playmakers. And he did a good job of that yesterday. He's done a good job of it, but yesterday I thought it was very good.
Was it loud at the beginning of the game? Bill, seemed like it was really loud.
Sure. Yeah, it really was.
You were having some communication issues there. It was so loud.
Yeah, sure it was. You know, they scored, they got on top early, and then, you know, had us in bad field position there on that first drive, and absolutely, they were kicking and screaming out there, and we got the penalty, so we're in long yardage, and that got it going. You know, luckily we were able to play through that, but it started off loud. And of course, the better you play on the road and the more you have the lead, the quieter it gets. And, you know, it's all, you always want to quiet the crowd down. The only way to quiet them down is to play well and score, you know, so that's, but, you know, I felt like by the end of the game, we had taken the crowd out of the game. You know, that was a big swing there at the end of the half where we got the interception, kicked the field goal. Then we had the possession to start the third quarter, scored, you know, held them to a field goal, and then scored again. And, you know, so that short sequence there, it wasn't short, it lasted about a whole almost, you know, 15-minute sequence. But, you know, that was really big in the whole, you know, swing of the momentum and the score and the whole tempo of the game, really.
Then they take their costumes off and go home. That's how it works. We'll take a 90-second break. When we come back, we'll talk about the Jets coming up this week with Bill Belichick. Quick break. We're live at Gillette Stadium. Back here on the Big Show, it's Patriots Monday. We're live at Gillette Stadium. Ordway, Holly, Teddy Bruschi, our third man in, and, of course, the coach, Bill Belichick. Well, this is a team you're quite familiar with, Bill. New York Jets are on the schedule here for Sunday afternoon. What have you seen differently here? They've had some issues running the football. What have you seen differently with the Jets here? And they've been on the road now. This will be the third week in a row they're on the road. What have you seen differently from the last couple of weeks?
Well, you know, they had a tough...
Where's that red button?
Might help.
Yeah.
yeah, of course, they had a tough loss against Oakland. I mean, that was a game that was, you know, basically tied going into the fourth quarter, and then they... you know, gave up they had the halfback pass. McFadden ran the ball, and then they got hit on the reverse, and then they fumbled a kickoff. And so they go from being tied to, you know, down by two scores, you know, in a hurry. And so that affected the outcome of the game. You know, last night's game was a crazy game with all the defensive scores and kickoff returns and all that. So and I don't know if there's any pattern. I think that they're still, you know, a very explosive team. I mean, they've got excellent skill players with their wide receivers. You know, Ed Mason, Burris, and of course, Antonio Holmes. Keller is kind of like a receiver playing running back. They got two good running backs with Green and Tomlinson. You know, defensively, we know they're a strong team, and they can turn the ball over and score as they did last night on David Harris's interception, you know, strip sacks, interceptions, things like that. And they're explosive in the return game. They've had, you know, four long returns already this year with, you know, Cromartie and McKnight on the kickoffs and Curley on the punts. So, and are a good punt blocking team, which we saw in the Dallas game. So, you know, they're a team you just can't relax on. They can hurt you in a lot of different ways. They're always strong in the kicking game, and you know, offensively they got a lot of good skill players, and defensively they're, you know, they're dangerous there too. So you just can't, you know, they can get you on any play.
And possibly another week. Maybe it's a for you know, it is a rivalry game. It is the New York Jets. It's going to be all the players are going to they're going to hear about revisiting the playoff loss last year and all the emotion and all the hype. But as you say, a lot of times the circus is coming into town probably to cover this game. So once again, it's going to be to the players about poise, keeping everything about doing their job and not getting involved in what maybe the Jets players may be through the media.
Yeah, well, I think, you know, first of all, none of the other games mean anything. We lost to them down there last year. That didn't mean anything in the 45-3 game. The 45-3 game didn't mean anything in a playoff game. So, you know, I don't think any of those games really matter. And, you know, any of the talk before the game, that's pretty irrelevant, too. You know, what we need to do is focus on what we need to do on Sunday and go out there and do our jobs on Sunday. That's when it matters. So hopefully we can do that this week, have a good week of practice, good week of preparation, and be ready to go this weekend.
Hey, look, Darrell Revis, he's no Vince Wilfork, but he's a pretty big cornerback. I'm just wondering, everybody calls him a shutdown cornerback, and I agree, but do you think the way the game is played now and the entire field is used, do you believe a shutdown cornerback in 2011 is somebody that you don't throw on? I mean, that seems like a pretty big concession to make as an offense where you say, I'm not going to throw to the side of the field that guy is on.
Well, I mean, I think it depends on, you know, what you're doing. I mean, you know, it depends on what else you have. That might be a good matchup, might not be a good matchup. Depends on what the rest of the play is. So he's been thrown on this year. I mean, he's had some balls caught on him. He's a good player. I mean, it's not easy. You got to run good routes. You got to make good throws, and you got to run the right ones. But, look, I mean, there's no question, you know, Revis is a strong player. He's a good tackler. He's very patient, plays a very good technique. He's very disciplined. He's not a gambler. He's not a guesser. So you've really got to, you know, beat him with a good route. You can't, you know, some guys, they'll cover one route and not cover the other route. And it depends on which one you have on, you know, when he's got covered, when he doesn't. You know, Revis is pretty good on everything, double moves and inside routes, outside routes. He's very patient at the line. He plays with a lot of confidence, a lot of good technique.
And strength too, huh? He seems to be a pretty
He's a strong kid. Yeah, strong he's a 200-pound guy that is a good tackler, can force the run, and so you know even balls that get caught on him. I mean, he makes a tackle. You don't very often see a guy catching it and then breaking a tackle and going for a long play. If they do catch it, he gets it down right away. But he's strong at the line. He's able to stand up to the bigger receivers and press them and get them off their route. And he's also quick enough to match up against guys who, aren't as strong as he is, but maybe can get away from him. But he's hard to get away from because he is bigger and longer. So that's, he does a good job.
Yeah, over on the Jets' offensive side of the ball, I think they only had maybe 38 yards rushing versus the Ravens last week. They're struggling in that department, but their backs still can be, very capable receivers like LaDainian Tomlinson a couple weeks ago versus the Raiders. I think it might have been a Ram pass versus Quentin Groves when I think it was Plaxico was the number three receiver, went across the middle, opened it up inside for LT. I think he was out of the backfield.
Yeah.
For the listeners out there, can you explain the Ram pass? And really, I mean, I say Ram pass, and I don't know what people know what I'm talking about with the Ram pass.
And I have no idea why
we call it the Ram pass.
Well, of course, the Rams ran it.
Right.
they made it famous when they were at, actually the Los Angeles Rams, and then later on the St. Louis Rams. But it's a play where a receiver usually goes in motion, and he starts like he's going outside, either in the slot or in the number three position, usually in the slot, and he starts like he's going outside, and if the defender overruns it, he undercuts him and shoots right up the seam, and the quarterback hits him in stride, and even though it's only maybe a 5-7 yard pass, if he gets a step on that defender, like Tomlinson did on Groves, then he's gone, and it's a big gain, or in that case it was a touchdown. So the Jets they run a lot of different concepts, but when they put Tomlinson on the field with three receivers, then it's really like having five receivers on the field. They have Tomlinson, they have Keller, who's a tight end, who's really like a receiver, and then they have the three receivers, Mason, Burris, and Holmes. So, those five guys are tough to cover. You can't double all of them, and, somebody's got to cover somebody without much help, or if he plays zone, then there's spacing issues and so forth. So, they have a lot of options with their skill players, and that's part of their team that's really, I think a strength for them. When all those guys are in there, it takes away some of their threats in the running game. But it's hard to defend in a pass game.
And Schottenheimer built that creatively. I think it was a split back look with Keller as the other backfield mate, and then he motioned out to be the number one.
Right.
And so then you had Plax at the number three, and then that opened it up for the Ram.
Right. Right. Yeah. Well, they do quite a bit of that where they use Keller. Or sometimes Holmes even in the backfield to try to help see what the coverage is and then motion them out and put them in different spots so that it's hard to key on. They move those guys around quite a bit. Yeah. I mean, you'll see Holmes outside, inside, Burris, same thing, Mason. I mean, they move those guys, Keller. Like, they all line up in different places. So defensively, it's hard to say even when they come into the game, well, this guy's going to be here. You know, you might be able to get right a percentage of the time, but there'll be plays where they won't be, and you'll have to make some kind of defensive adjustment.
That's what I was going to say. So there's going to be multiple adjustments that's going to have to be made pre and post snap.
Absolutely, mean, yeah. And the Jets do a lot of that. They run some offensive linemen at tight end. They use some two tight end sets. They use some three receiver sets. When they flex Keller out, they're really in a four receiver set, even though they only really have three receivers in the game. But he's like a receiver. They'll get an empty. They'll run some wildcat with Curley back there as the quarterback. So, unbalanced line. They have the whole, you know, they have the whole package.
I'm going to change your job for you in the next minute or so. I'm going to make you the head of officials, or I'm going to make you an official. And I'm referring to this Giants Cardinals game. Victor Cruz, pride of UMass, appears to fumble to me. The official rule was that he gave himself up, and that was a huge play in that Cardinals-Giants game. The Giants won that game with a comeback. What did you think of that play, and what kind of precedent does that set for a receiver doing something like that?
I don't make the rules. We just, you know, try to coach them and interpret them. You know, there was a memo sent out earlier today about you know, regarding that, about, you know, runner being down and giving himself up or not giving himself up, and then that was followed up with we'll send you a further explanation of this, or, you know, something like that. So it sounds like there's going to be more information or interpretation forthcoming on that. So it was definitely a play there that I think needs some clarification, because as you know, we know we had a similar play like that last year in the San Diego game, where the receiver caught the ball, he put it down, James Sanders came in and recovered it, and it was ruled a fumble, which we all felt it was a fumble. The Cruz play looked similar to that, and now they're saying that wasn't a fumble. So I don't know. I think, you know, one of the hardest things in officials, and one of the things that, you know, from Art McNally, who was a longtime head of officials, to more recently Mike Pereira, one of the things that they've always said, and I think it's a foundation of officiating, is it's hard to officiate intent. Like, it's hard to say what a guy's trying to do or not trying to do. That's why the rules are, for the most part, are it's black or it's white. Either he does it and it's a foul, or he didn't do it and it's not a foul. And so I think, you know, the concept of the giving yourself up rule is, okay, if you slide feet first, you're giving yourself up. If you take a knee, you're giving yourself up. And if you go head first, then, you know, well, in this case, he's going head first to get more yardage. In another case, he's going head first to give himself up. You know, now you're asking the official to make a judgment of what's he intending to do, you know, as opposed to what he actually did. And I think that's one of the things you want to try to take out of the official's hands. Let him just, you know, have a black and white ruling. You know, it's holding, it's not holding, not was he trying to hold him or was he not trying, you know, that kind of thing. So
right, because defensively you're also sort of viewing that player, you're reading his intent, because when you dive head first, you can do the roll. You
sure.
can roll forward for another yard or two, and if you're, I mean, if it's third and 11 and he stops at 9 yards, I mean, your intent is that guy is going to try and get two more yards, so you got to go down there, you got to tag him before he gets up. Or and in that case, the Arizona Cardinals, as they were coming to tag him, the kid gets up and leaves the ball. I mean, to me, I see it as a fumble. And that's,
yeah.
But that's my intent. That's my read on it.
But the letter of the rule, the written rule, doesn't say head first or feet first, correct?
You know, like a lot of things in the NFL rule book, unfortunately, there are rules, and then there are interpretations that go with the rules. and not all the interpretations are included with the rules. But when the rules are presented, and a lot of times they're explained as, you know, as an example, what's offside on the kickoff? Well, the interpretation of that for the officials is it's an imaginary pane of glass. And if any player breaks that pane of glass when the kicker hits the ball, he's offside. Is his foot down? Did his foot hit the ground? There's a pane of glass. Okay, that's so there are things like that. There are kind of, if you will, talking points, coaching points for officials on how to rule certain plays. And so, again, not everything's included in the actual written part of the rule. There are also other parts of the interpretation that are part of the rule, and sometimes those get modified and or changed.
So one more thing on intent. Can we plant the intent into Vince's mind that the next time he gets an interception, he can lateral the ball? Can we get that intent planted in him? Because, I mean, it seems like he's getting those interceptions. Can we get him to the end zone?
Say one thing, he's not fumbling that ball.
You don't want to be too loose with that ball, Teddy. You know that.
Yeah. They're coming to take you away. So I think you're going to have to go. Okay.
No, we're okay.
I thought they were coming to take him away.
Absolutely not.
I wanted to ask you a question about Terry Francona, because you guys had something unique. Four coaches, managers here in town that had all won championships and still held their jobs. And now, obviously, he does not hold his job. How difficult do you think it is to carry out what you guys have to do for such a long period of time and be able to control, let's say, the culture of a locker room or a dressing room or a clubhouse when you're dealing with a lot of different influences, when you're dealing with guys who have tremendous success and sometimes maybe not you, Teddy, but some others, sat back and kind of enjoyed their success and looked from afar and didn't continue trying to take it to the next level? How difficult is that to be able to maintain that over a long period of time?
Yeah, I mean, I don't really know, Glenn. I mean, that's a hard question to answer. I don't know. I couldn't give you an evaluation or a percentage, or I'm not really sure what you're looking for. I think, you know, look, every job's challenging. And as a coach, you have challenges every year. You have challenges every week. You have challenges every day. You know, as a coach, you make a lot of decisions on just little things, you know, what to say to a player, what not to say to a player, who to play, what play to run, how to run it, so forth and so on. So that's, you know, I think you, as a coach, you try to manage your team, try to manage your players, try to manage your staff, you try to manage all your support people and do the best that you can to give your team the best chance to win. And I think that's what coaches do, you know, and obviously, you know, we all make a lot of mistakes. You know, nobody makes more than I do, but the intent of what I'm trying to do is, you know, always do what's best for the team. And at the same time, I think, you know, for the players, generally, their intent is to do what's best for the team, too. And sometimes it comes in conflict, but, you know, I don't think players, you know, they go out there and they do what they think's right at the time. You know, sometimes it's not right. Sometimes what I do is not right. But you're trying to do the right thing. And so, you know, as long as that's the way it is, I think you respect that. You try to get on the same page. You try to learn. When you're not quite consistent, how to get on the same page and you learn from those situations. But, you know, coaching is challenging. I mean, it's a very competitive sport, football, baseball, you know, hockey, basketball. I mean, you got a whole bunch of other teams trying to do the same thing you are with basically the same, you know, opportunities. They all got good players. They got good coaches. They got, you know, good facilities. They're working just as hard as you are. And so, you know, it's very competitive. They have their challenges. You have yours. You try to do the best you can with them.
I just want to say quickly, Doc Rivers said earlier today that, you know, losing Tito from town was kind of like losing a brother, and he said there's a good fraternity in the Boston pro coaches here. You guys all learn from each other. I know you have a lot of respect for all the guys in Boston sports. What were you able to learn from Tito, and what was that connection like with him?
Oh, it was great. I mean, I think Tito, he was a great friend to me. He was a great supporter, And I, you know, I spent quite a bit of time with him primarily at training camp in the spring, but, you know, also at games here, you know, going over and being able to go in the clubhouse and, you know, catch up with him from time to time and, you know, exchange texts and, you know, talk on the phone and things like that. So, absolutely, I would reiterate what Doc said. you know, he'll be missed personally. I mean, I'll miss him personally, not being here. You know, I loved his managerial style. Thought that he was, you know, very fair, honest. Certainly had the respect of the players, all the players that I've ever talked to. You know, and not saying it just to, you know, be polite or anything, but I think there was, you know, a genuine respect and admiration for the way he handled the team and you know, how honest he was and how, you know, how he put the team first. And it was never about him, it was about the team. I think he did things the right way, and you know, I totally respect Tito and the job that he did here. And he had a terrific record. I mean, there's how many managers like that have his record, so... You know, we go 100 and some years without a championship in Boston, and then he puts two of them up there. So, you know, I think that pretty much says it all right there, you know.
All right, Bill, good luck against the Jets on Sunday. We'll see you back here on Monday.
Okay, all right. Thanks, Lynn. Michael, Teddy, thank you.
Bill Belichick right here on Patriots Monday on the Big Show, live at Gillette.